Shalom, damn it! This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, and I am thrilled to be here on the Dave's Gone By radio program talking to a person who makes wonderful, beautiful music. Now, most of the time, he makes sort of pop country music. They call it country-politan, which I can barely pronounce, let alone listen to. However, he is now working on a show that is bound, perhaps, for Broadway. And this music is not only nice, happy Broadway show tune music, it is based on the Nigunim, the songs of the one and only Shlomo Carlbach of blessed memory, that beautiful singer and folk person and spiritual man. And so I am excited to be talking to Gary Morris about music, about Jews, about theater. Welcome, Gary Morris, to the neighborhood. Shalom to you.
Thank you. Shalom to you back from one rabbi to another. I'm so delighted to be talking to you.
Oh, well, that is very kind. Now, you are not, of course, a rabbi in real... I don't think you're even Jewish. Is that correct?
That would be correct.
So...
That would be correct. But I am, when I arrive in the streets of New York,
that's
where I am.
The first time you taste a knish, you become Jewish when you're in New York City. I understand this.
It's the matzo ball soup that does it.
It is. It is. Plus the pastrami at Katz's Delicatessen on 2nd Avenue.
Exactly right.
Even though it's not kosher, but there you go. So the big question then is, of all people, when they're looking for a star to be in a show about Reb Shlomo, who's singing songs in Hebrew, biblically based songs, and he's a rabbi, how did you get the part?
They saw a YouTube of me singing Wind Beneath My Wings, which was... a live concert with me, just with the guitar, and the next thing I know, I got a script in the mail, and please come be our Shlomo, when we feel like you understand who he is by the way we hear you sing. So that's how I got involved, and that was the first call, and then I got the material and thought, it's really some good, challenging work. So here I sit in New York right now.
Had you ever heard of Shlomo Carlbach before you got that script, before they contacted you?
Oh, yes. I played all his records, Norm, right along besides Hank Williams. Hank and then Shlomo.
Oh, now stop that. Because I did. I mean, I grew up with that music. It's a wonderful, beautiful music. Now, let's be clear about... by the way, the name of the show is called Soul Doctor, which I can...
Soul Doctor.
I need a doctor for every part of me, not just the soul. But this particular show is Soul Doctor. Is the music in it original music composed by the people who made the show, or are they putting in the actual Shlomo songs, the Nigunim that he wrote?
It's all his melodies.
Oh, good. Oh, lovely. But are the lyrics taken from biblical passages, or are they songs written for the show?
Well, it depends on whether it's recitatives, stuff which explains the backstory, and then or whether it's an actual from Shlomo recording. So there's a bit of both. There's some in Hebrew, and the majority of the show, of course, is in English, so that we don't just have Hebrew listeners in the audience.
Well, that's all I have in my audience, so you might as well appeal to them. I should tell you there. So does the Soul Doctor, does it cover his whole life from, like, in the 60s when he was a folk hippie sort of guru all the way towards the end, or does it just cover one aspect? What is the thrust, the narrative push of Soul Doctor?
It begins at the end of his life and goes back to when he was a very young child, 12, 13 years old. So it encompasses basically that point to his death.
Okay. Do you play him as a 13-year-old?
I played him as a 13-year-old. They had to shrink me up for that. No, actually, there's three different actors during the course of the evening. There's a wonderful, wonderful boy playing the 13-year-old. So, anyway, a little tiny. I don't think I was ever as small as he is.
Well, let me ask, so you're doing it as we speak, it's in Florida, this is early January, so you're trying it out in a couple of different places in Florida, and then what are the future plans? I mean, Broadway's on the horizon, but what's specific?
I can't give you the specific yet. Florida, Miami, and then Fort Lauderdale, and then the talk is move to Toronto to a wonderful theater in Toronto for a few weeks, and then looking at New York. I have no more information than that.
Okay.
Part of being Shlomo is being kept in the dark.
Well, we'll talk about that later. But let me ask: this is not your first Broadway.
Rodeo?
Well, I'm sorry.
Not my first rodeo. No.
Certainly not your first rodeo. But your first theater musical experience. As a matter of fact, you played Jean Valjean in Les Mis on Broadway. In fact, you have a very special distinction for doing that, unless I'm mistaken.
Yes, I was the first American to play that role on Broadway. But before that, I did La Boheme with Linda Ronstadt in New York. So
that's right. That was Joseph Papp was trying to do, I guess, recreate the lightning in a bottle that he hit when he did Gilbert and Sullivan with her a few years earlier. So they tried to do a La Boheme at the Public Theater. And
right.
How did that go? I mean, I know the critics weren't in love with it, but how was the experience for you?
It was great, and the critics were very nice to me. But the critics, you know, if you're going to bring critics from that go to the Met to hear La Boheme and see a pared down story done in English, you're not going to like it. However, if you want to go, it was a wonderfully entertaining night of music. I thought I enjoyed doing it, and I thought Linda was brilliant. And they ragged on her, said her head voice was just not that strong. I'm going, you know, we're not opera singers standing in place with good footing supporting ourselves. We're actually actors moving, and opera singers don't do that. So, anyway, I thought it was a great experience.
Do you have operatic training?
I have no training.
Really? None? Seriously? Are you actually not even for regular singing or voice or maintaining your throat or any of that?
Southern Baptist Church.
I've never been in one. I would probably shrivel and turn to ash if I walked into one of those.
You can't go in one. You will be killed.
That's what I thought. I assumed it was true, but I never wanted to test out the theory for obvious reasons. So you grew up in school. You were in church every Sunday singing in the choir?
That would be correct.
And was there a point when they were saying, ooh, you have a beautiful voice. You should do something with this?
No, it actually never happened like that. It happened. I went to Colorado for a summer with some boys, friends of mine from Texas, and we went there to Denver to drink beer and chase girls. And as it worked out, I stayed. We started playing music, and I thought, good choice.
Good.
So I stayed.
Music more fun than chasing girls? I don't know about that. Well, I've been married.
Will it work for you?
My dear wife Miriam Libby would not be appreciative of that statement, but we'll talk. We'll talk. So, you mentioned Colorado. I should say that this program that I am on with my good friend Dave Lefkowitz, Dave's Gone By, is coming out of the University of Northern Colorado. So we're out here by the Rocky Mountains. Do you live a lot in Colorado? Do you travel here a lot?
I own a ranch in southern Colorado. It's where I call home.
Oh, my, a ranch? Do you have animals and all that?
We have animals. Live ones and dead ones.
Well, I would, you know, the dead ones do become a health problem unless we do something with them.
I have a hunting lodge and a river running through it, and it's down close to the southwest corner, down around Durango.
My goodness. So all of this comes from the proceeds of Wings Beneath My Wings, or whatever, that big song?
A little of that, a little bit of Wind Beneath My Wings, and a little bit of several different records along the way.
Now, how did that song come to you? Because a lot of people, of course, have covered that song. You did not write the song either, but you had one of the most popular versions of it. Was it just kismet that it came to you?
No, actually, the two boys that wrote the song were in the next room. We all wrote for Warner Brothers Music.
Oh.
And I heard it and said, I got to record it. And by the time I put it out, it was the first single on the song, and it won Song of the Year for me in 1980, for the year 1980. 1983, and then about 6 years later, I believe it won a Grammy for Bette in Bette Midler in From Beaches.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a big song and a great song for me to be able to hang my hat on still.
What would you say are among the two or three favorite songs that you have done over your career, both on Warner Brothers and other labels and just doing concerts and tours and things like that?
I love Sing Wind because it's such a popular song. And it's always the last song you wrote, if you love to sing. I have a song that's relatively new that's called If You Were Mine that I really am fond of singing. And then probably from a request standpoint, singing Bring 'Em Home from Les Mis.
Ah, well, yeah, everybody loves that. So you can do the falsetto, right? You can put your...
I'll make it work.
Because I remember Dudu Fisher used to have it to tie his testicles in a knot just to sing that song. And it was annoying for the audience because I have to watch him on stage during, that third act of Les Mis. Here it was, the 3 hours into the show. And I have to stand there, take down his pants, take the belt, tie it. He do bring him home, and then he got to untie. And it made the show run 3.5 hours, but it was worth it. It was beautiful.
Yeah, well, basically you'd solve that with just one whack of a knife.
Yes, but then you can't do the rest of the show.
That's right.
Then you'd be going up to Javert and saying, "Oh, well, I'm stealing a candlestick." It would not be good. Let me tell you, there would just be a big problem right there. We're talking with Gary Morris. The are you also a songwriter or merely not merely, but do you only sing?
I was signed as a songwriter before I was signed as an artist.
Oh, okay.
A lot of people don't know that, but I was signed to Warner Brothers Music as a writer. And if you sing songs or if you make records and you're a writer, and you pitch a song to somebody, they go, "Well, I mean, it must not be a good song because he's not recording it himself."
Hmm.
So a lot of songs I just set on the shelf and I'm breaking a few of them out now that have been around for quite a while.
So how do you think the industry, both positively and negatively, has changed in the sense of back then, like 20, 25 years ago, you were releasing albums on Warner Brothers Records, you put out an album, you did promotion, blah, blah, blah. Now the whole music industry is through a sea change of how everything is done. Do you think it's better, it's worse, just different? What?
The process is the main thing that's changed, and the immediacy of music. Because people have about a 3-second attention span today because of technology, where we are, the whole process.
Wait, I'm sorry, hold on, I wasn't paying attention. What were you saying? That was a joke.
Yes, I know. That was good.
Thank you very much, yes.
The process is what's changed. I think people expect less out of their artists. They just want something to, some kind of noise to fill their day for the most part. Everything now is about distraction and how do we fill our time. I go down to my youngest son who's 14, and we would say, well, okay, he's ADD because he has to do something every moment. His mind has to be moving. And it's part of the generation today. So music's changed, and process has changed, and I think music is accepted and expected to be free. So that's a whole different mindset from 25 years ago, or 50 years ago, or ever in America.
Whereas, yeah, in the old days, the only way to hear free music was on the radio. You'd have to wait until the DJ chose to play the song you wanted to hear again. And then that was it. That was your only your choice. Now it's like, oh, I want to hear a song. I want to hear it right now. Let me go to YouTube. Let me go to Rhapsody. Let me, it's an a paradigm shift. And sometimes you don't even have to pay a pair of dimes to hear it. It's right there, for
that's
free.
Right.
But
so eventually what happens is the creators of the music, the writers, the geniuses that create the songs that end up being what the artists sing, they stop doing it because they can't make a living because they're not paid anything. And, constant battle of greed versus acceptance. And while we love the fact that our music is free, if you look at young people today, they're going back to the music of the 60s and the 70s. Now, I'm not saying just because it's cyclical, but because it actually was heartfelt music created by artists that had something to say. And not that they're... It wasn't the music, the current music of pop music of the day. It was revolutionary, represented a concept for a whole class of people.
Well, actually, that kind of leads to, on some level, political stuff, because if someone would identify, if they would look at you from far away and they would see that you live on a ranch and you do country music and some spiritual and patriotic music, they would figure that you are like... So right-wing Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, maybe you are at this point, but way back when you worked with Jimmy Carter.
That's right. Those names you just mentioned would be like for me being a rabbi going into a church.
Wow.
One of the most interesting parts of this show that I'm really blessed to be a part of is that Shlomo represented, and his life was about, people need to love people, not people need to hate people or divide people or conquer people or fight people, but people need to love people, and we are of one God, love people. And it's I think, so important, and politically we talk, the country is divided 40-40 and 20 going, well, we never make up our mind anyway.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And there are those people that will take the wedge and try to drive it even further between us. So for me, it's the right time to be doing this music. If you look at my own records, the song I've got out now, Faith and Freedom, you know, it talks about all holy in his sight. And that, in God's sight, all of us, we're all important. We're all God's children. And
I'm slightly less important. I'll admit that. I think there are people who are more important.
You are marginal, but God, but anyway.
Marginally holy, I think so, yeah.
Hi, this is Gary Morris, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By.
Let me ask, and this is probably the toughest question that I do have to ask Gary Morris, who is going to be in Soul Doctor, in Florida, and then possibly in Toronto, and then maybe on Broadway in the months and maybe a year or two ahead. One thing also about the show and Shlomo, and if you have not been asked this yet, if it won't be me, it'll be somebody else. In the coverage of Reb Shlomo's life, do they go into the area of the allegations that came out after he died?
I think certainly. Certainly there's a big part of that as part of the show.
They don't steer away from that.
There's no sugarcoating the fact that there was problems between Shlomo and the synagogue and the faith. And there's a Nina Simone character in it, and he's clear about. I think there's nothing that's really obviously intentionally overlooked.
Well, I'm not sure then what controversy are you referring to?
The one you are, that he wore a baseball cap when he was a rabbi. That's what you're talking about, right?
No, that's not what I'm talking about at all. That's nothing. He was on your joke. I'm sorry, I missed your joke. That was wry wit. I missed that. No. Your joke is more along the lines of Joe DiMaggio and people like that. My joke is more along the lines of Sandusky.
Yeah.
So
I'm not sure exactly how that part is addressed, because you see, at that point in the story, I'm the father. I'm out of it. But there is the whole storyline of the synagogue of love in Berkeley or California.
Right. it's one thing to be controversial because he was the first rabbi, to pray with women in some way, or Orthodox rabbi, and doing all these things that we look back on as being good, unless you're really, really ultra-Orthodox. And then there are the allegations of the molestation and things like that, where nobody can look at that as good. And I just want to make sure that that's being addressed in the musical. So there you go. Because you can't really have a musical without molestation in this day and age. It just wouldn't work.
You know, you can sell more tickets with one good rape scene in a movie than all the children's stories in life. That doesn't mean that in all the children's stories you have to have a rape scene. So I'm not sure exactly how. That's not my job.
I always thought that was my role. That was what was missing from Hansel and Gretel.
Hansel went up the hill, right. Gretel got raped by Hansel, and then it became a great story.
And Goldilocks, too. Three bears in there. I mean, why was her bed broken? You know, really, why? We know.
Absolutely.
Moving on with Gary Marsh, just a couple more quick questions for you, and I thank you so much for taking the time. And here's a thing. You recently worked with the one and the only Juice Newton. A name I, with all due respect, I have not heard in about 25, 30 years. How is Juice Newton doing?
Juice is good, but it's been probably 5 years since I did something with her.
Oh, okay. She was on an album of yours, or you were an album of hers, or something like
that?
I was on
an album of hers, and I don't know. Maybe that album has recently been re-released. I'm not sure. I did a duet with her.
But she's well, she's healthy.
She's great.
Good. And speaking of singing and well and healthy, one of your children is a performer as well, I believe. And did you ever warn your kids about going into the showbiz, or did you encourage it, or...
I said, don't become a rabbi and don't do a talk show.
Good advice. Very good. But seriously, I mean, what did you... When your kids said, oh, I want to sing, how did you react?
My son, at 7 years of age, went on stage with me front of 10,000 people and got a standing ovation singing, "Your Mama Don't Dance, Your Daddy Doesn't Rock, Don't Rock and Roll."
I know that song, yeah.
And it's like, you don't tell him not to sing. So, he was a Mouseketeer, and he did the whole Disney thing, and I wasn't one that suggested he audition, but out of 17,000 kids, he got one of two slots. So,
Mazel tov.
He's pretty much off the chart in terms of being a singer, performer, and writer. He's having tremendous as a writer right now, and he lives in Denver.
Can you say his name, or is that the secret? Or?
Yeah, his name is Matt Morris.
Matt Morris. Everybody look.
My
for
youngest son is in the show with me here. My youngest son Garen is in Soul Doctor, so it's like family affair right now.
Oh, I did not know that. That's marvelous. Was that kind of a?
Well, Rabbi, I can't expect you to know everything. I mean,
well, I do have a direct pipeline to God. Unfortunately, it goes right into my tuchus, but can't be helped. Can't be helped there. So that's wonderful. I guess my last question for the delightful and very amusing, I should say, Gary Morris, is about country music, which has been mainly your field for the past couple of decades. What is it about country music that it won't catch on in New York? Everywhere else, people, I'm in Colorado half the time, and it's on all the radio stations.
Well, Rabbi, you should know this.
Yeah.
The number one market for the sale of country music on Taylor Swift's 3.8 million sales came from the number one market, New York City. So maybe it won't catch on, but more country records are sold in New York City than any city in America.
Well, Taylor Swift is a special thing because she looks like a porn star. But I'm talking, Kate Smith, I don't know. Then that might be a little different.
Yeah, well, Taylor Swift represents the young part of country music today, and it's the only one I have numbers on. But I know when I was touring, WHN in New York City was the number one country radio station in America. And the main part of that is because there are 15 million people that live within the reach of the station. So
you're absolutely,
you get 10% of it, and you've got a huge number of people.
I forgot about that. You're right. There was that point in the 1970s for about 10 years when it was huge. I totally... That is right, Gary Marsh. You are so correct. And my last question, then, is how spiritual a person... since we're talking about Soul Doctor and Shlomo and all this, Do you go to church a lot, a little? What is your relationship to the Maker, whoever he or she is?
I'm a Christian, so I'm a Christian playing a rabbi in a wonderful musical, and it's a great challenge, and I love the challenge, and I actually am spiritually growing because of this experience, too.
Oh, that is wonderful to hear, and I even forgive you, Gary Mars, for being a Christian. That's how open I am. I want to thank you so much for being in the neighborhood. I want everybody to go find Soul Doctor where it's playing in Florida. Keep your eyes on it for when it comes to Canada and possibly Broadway, of course, as well. I wish you much luck and success with the show and the music. Gary Morris, thank you so much.
Thank you.